in Berkeley. I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints. The violent occupation of Palestine has continued apace in the last week. There has been the killing of a number of children, the destruction or the prepared destruction of an entire village, 40 houses about to be demolished or already demolished, and the attacks continue. We're now joined by Anne Gwynn. Please, Anne, introduce yourself and tell us what's going on.
My name is Anne Gwynn. I'm from Wales. I'm a 65-year-old grandmother. I'm here in Nablus, which is in the North Palestine, a city under siege. Actually, today, day 292. The city has been under constant curfew every single day for 292 days. It has been under total curfew, 24 hours a day, for three solid months, when no one was allowed out without being running risk of being shot. We're expecting an attack today because all surrounding cities, Tulkarem, Jenin, Balata refugee camp, Askara refugee camp, they've all been attacked in the last 3 to 4 days. People have been killed every time. People have been arrested without any charge, without any proof, without any destination stated, just simply taken away, 15 at a time from all these places in handcuffs. We in Nablus have expected this attack for the last 4 days. It didn't come. But tonight, I was sitting writing an email, sending with a document about today's diary, when I heard tanks everywhere. I rushed out down the leafy little one-way street to the right of this ambulance center to see, never before in my life, four enormous tanks in a column going across the bottom of the road, accompanied by an enormous bulldozer, I mean bigger than the tanks, and several jeeps. I came back to write to you about this, and just as I had just got about two paragraphs, my God, I heard them coming down the side street, more of them, another four, right past here, not more than 10 feet to the hedge from the window, actually there, I couldn't believe it. So they have gone into the residential area, I don't know where, because we are on the outskirts of Nablus. Eight tanks in the city center of a 3,000-year-old city are not here to look at the shops. They are really here to either demolish many houses, because eight tanks is a lot. One tank does a good job of demolition. Or, I don't know what they're here for. I really don't know what they're here for.
And why are you there, a 65-year-old grandmother? What are you doing
65,
there?
65, yeah. I came here on my own because I met Dr. Mustafa Barghouti in London, and I was very impressed with him. And I just have been very worried about Palestine, of course, as we all are, for a number of years, but couldn't quite make the jump, and I just came. It's a life-changing experience for anyone who cares to come. We need every international we can get. They protect the ambulances. They protect the people whom the secret police pick up. I've been with the secret police for 5 hours this morning with a shin bait.
And what were you doing there at the secret at the offices of the secret police?
A young Palestinian called Hussein Khalili. He's 29. He's married to an American woman who has been deported to Switzerland by the Israelis from Palestine, not allowed to stay with her Palestinian husband. So this morning we were at the Huwara checkpoint. Afra, weeping, got into one taxi to take her to Tel Aviv. And I and Hussein got into the other one to take us to the Shin Bet headquarters between the Huwara and Awarta checkpoints. We thought that if I went, I look a bit sort of grandmotherly. It did work. After 5 hours, he was freed, and we floated on cloud nine all the way back to the ambulance center.
Well, Anne Gwynn, we want to thank you very much. You've been calling us on a daily basis trying to tell us what's going on. We're hearing reports of demolition, one demolition of an entire town. We're hearing about the closing of universities. We're hearing about now many children, so many children being killed that there's now a children's cemetery. It must be something to see this firsthand.
One of the things I have been really, really privileged to do here is to be able to go out in the ambulances. It's a rare privilege. I'm the only international who is in the ambulances, and I do it most of every day, and I do it often at night. Tonight I am here to go all night. But the fact that I'm an international offers some protection to the drivers. They are unlikely to shoot a driver if there is an international in the cab. They have actually killed 20 ambulance drivers here in Nablus, and 85 ambulances have been totally destroyed. The things that happen here are things that happen in war, not in a situation where you have a city of 186,000 people who are being regularly attacked by huge, I wish I knew the name, huge tanks, F-16s, the usual war things, huge bullets from high-velocity rifles, which actually blow a child's head off. One of the other ambulance drivers, Firaz, he said to me the other day, he said, you know, I picked up a child, 18 months old, who'd been shot straight into his face, and there was nothing left. Not a mistake. And he said, you know why he was shot? Because they thought he was a terrorist. But people should have to think this in 2003.
And they opened fire because the kids are throwing rocks?
Yes. And I always thought that maybe, until I came here, they were big. But I tried it. They are palm-sized because they cannot get within 100 yards of usually of a tank or anybody. So when they throw, it has to go a long way, because to throw anything heavy that far, you can't. They really are palm-sized stones. And many times after a child and some young people, one guy was killed and seven were very, very seriously injured 4 or 5 nights ago. I went to look at the stones in the ambulance. We were after we'd taken them all to hospital. And really, they were stones, small. There was nothing that, you know, could have hurt a soldier in a steel helmet.
And do they open up with heavy weaponry?
Yes, they were very, very large shoot-to-kill bullets. The young man who was killed had a huge bullet, straight through the heart. So it wasn't accidental that he was killed. The young man who is fighting for his life now, he's 16, he had an enormous bullet in the groin, which completely cut a big chunk out of his vein that goes down from the abdomen into the leg. And he had really, really such severe blood loss. Another young man is also fighting for his life. He got an enormous bullet, which shattered the bones of his upper arm and lodged in his lung, and again caused huge, huge, huge blood loss. Because, of course, when the ambulance gets to the checkpoint, this is normal here. I nearly didn't tell you. You can be waiting for... Well, we have waited 5 hours. We've delivered babies at the checkpoints. And Dr. Hassan, he is actually the director of this particular center. His wife actually was telling me yesterday, she's a gynecologist who waited 5 hours at a checkpoint and then was turned back yesterday with the mobile clinic. She said that Hassan recently went out on the Jerusalem Road to pick up a child who had been killed, and the brain had been blown out of the child's head. There was no face, and it lay on the roadside, and somehow it hadn't been damaged, and he just picked it up in his two hands and put it on the stretcher, and now he dreams about it. And all the ambulance drivers here are in a really desperate state. I mean, they don't sleep. They have horrendous nightmares when they do sleep. The pictures, of course, are in their head all the time. It's very difficult. Everyone in this city who has been, and they've all been through a lot, say this is the worst it's ever been. We cannot move. Every city on the West Bank, not just Nablus, is closed. I was at the biggest checkpoint today, and he said, no one allowed through, only passport holder, no one else, whether you're going to visit baby, nothing, no one. Thank you, Dennis.